to Chatting About Chan. I am one of your hosts, Ethan, and I'm here with my co-host,
Mason.
All right, Mason, and it's we're in the heat of the summer in August, and we're here today to talk about another wonderful Jackie Chan gem, To Kill with Intrigue, released in 1977. And another, yeah, it's just, I have a confession. I kind of lied in the last podcast. I said for Shaolin Wooden Men, I said, hey, we're in the clear. We're on track to the classic Jackie movies, and this is the beginning of it. That movie was not. I don't know why I said that. I think that we can agree that the beginning of the classic Jackie that we know on screen starts with Snakes in the Eagle's Shadow. And I always say that because of the books we've read, and also because I've seen it personally. Because I said that about Shaolin Wooden Men because it was much more similar in storyline to the Jackie films that we're familiar with. But in no way was it a regular Jackie movie. I just thought we were like kind of getting back to, we were getting into a groove of something we were familiar with, and then The Kill with Intrigue just kind of pulled that all away from me. And I realized, yeah. I was wrong. So
it's a pretty wild movie.
Yeah, let's dig in. I mean, this was nuts. And well, it's a combination of, I'm just so over this, man. I'm so over these bad movies. It's just, if we ever get to meet with Jackie, I'm going to be honest with him. And I hope that he appreciates my honesty. Like, I'm not going to be a yes man around him, because this is just a shitty movie. And by the way, Mason, I found a really good documentary on Hong Kong cinema. It's like 2.5 hours long on YouTube. I got to send it to you. But
yeah, I'll check it out.
I've got to wonder, obviously any film industry is making movies to make money, but it's as if they just didn't care. And they don't assume that, you know, these movies are so poorly written that the plot in this film is so convoluted, like previous Jackie films we've seen. And it's just such non-plot that I just don't understand if they think that audiences are dumb and how could they assume that anyone would care about what's on screen, because it's just so boring when there's no action.
Yeah, well, it wasn't super concise, but it was a little bit more coherent than some of the films we've seen.
It was coherent, but it was still a mess, and things just happen, and it's a train wreck in a good way. There is some really funny stuff, and the movie made me laugh out loud 3 times. And there's just some weird. It's weird. Like, the movie has some outrageous moments, but they're scattered across the film. It's not consistent. So it got really drab at times, and I was just over it. And it's not the action in the film doesn't happen consistently. It happens in spurts, and it doesn't happen for very long. So first, let's talk about, let's summarize, because, you know, we spend sometimes a long time describing the plot of the film. So in a nutshell, what would you say the plot of this movie is?
The plot is that Jackie Chan plays a guy called Liu Chin. Is that his name?
Shao. It wasn't like S-I-O.
Siu Chen?
Yeah. Something
like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Forget
who Jackie. We could just call him Jackie Chan, I guess. He's basically sent his pregnant girlfriend away because he knows that there's a gang coming to get revenge on his father and the rest of his family. And he lies to her and says he doesn't love her. There's no way she can prove the kid's not his. So she leaves. And then the gang shows up, kills his parents, and lets Jackie live. And the gang, I guess it's the Killer Bee gang, right?
Yeah, Killer Bees.
But that gang disappears at some point and becomes sort of a different gang, which is confusing. But basically, the Killer Bees kill his parents, but they let him live. And it's led by this woman with a scar on her face. And she's like, I want you to live so that you can suffer. And basically, she's just taunting him the whole movie. And also, I guess she's kind of in love with him. It seems like she's always trying to get him to sleep with her, but all Jackie's doing in the whole movie is calling out for his ex-girlfriend or his girlfriend that he's sent away. So that's basically it. Is Jackie trying to get back his girlfriend, and this woman is tormenting him?
Yes. and somehow, and this movie just makes no sense. It doesn't have any regard for time or anything. It's just, things just happen to happen. And it's just infuriating because, I mean, yeah, you can laugh at it, but at the same time, it's just, it's so, like I said, it's just non-plot. And there's no theme to the movie. But yeah, we generally are trying, I was trying to move away from talking too much about the film and focus more on the Jackie aspects, but we can't, like, we have to talk about this movie. So I'd say that Jackie, so like, here we are on what, this is directed by, another movie directed by Wei Lo, the guy who directed Big Boss and Fist of Fury with Bruce Lee. He, I think, you know, you could credit him with making Bruce Lee a star. And it's funny because Fist of Fury was a very well shot movie. The cinematography was very nice. It was well directed. The action scenes in that movie were awesome. And then New Fist of Fury, which came out 6 years later, 5 or 6 years later, was just trash. Like, it's hard to believe the same guy directed that movie. And now we have To Kill with Intrigue, and the cinematography is good again, but the movie makes no sense. And it's just so funny that Wei Lo was so hellbent on trying to make Jackie a star, but just going about it so wrongly. So in this movie, Jackie is a dramatic lead. And I will say that even though his acting is not good, it's leagues above what we saw in the last movie, even from Shaolin Wooden Men. Like, he's talking the whole film. In Shaolin Wooden Men, he was a mute. And in this one, he definitely is trying. And I would say it's not good. Again, it's not good, but it's a lot better than what he was before. But again, it's funny that Wei Lo was forcing him to be something that he's not. And it's clear on screen.
Yeah, it you know, very uneven movie.
If we're going to talk about the movie, let's talk about it from the very beginning. So, also, I want to say I looked online, and I want to give this guy credit because, obviously, that's where I got my information from. I found a review on a website called horrorcultfilms.co.uk, and in the review, the guy talks about how apparently Wei Lo and Jackie were fighting the whole time. And the movie bombed, and it was pulled from cinemas in 5 days in Hong Kong. Like, that's how bad, it bombed. And I don't blame them. I mean, just like, it just, oh, and the movie was adapted from a Wuxia story, which was common. But and then Mason, I don't remember this, but apparently this guy pulled a quote from one of Jackie's biographies that even Wei Lo didn't know what was happening in the movie at one point. That's how bad, poorly written this was. So let's start from the beginning, because this movie is filled with nuggets of just weirdness. And I hope we can talk to Jackie about this one day, because it's so bizarre. So Mason, do you want to set up like just the opening 20 minutes?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I mean, yes. But basically, Jackie is, he's like the son of a kind of a rich man, a wealthy family. And he's got this girl. He's like a girlfriend. Is she like a concubine or something?
She's a housemaid.
Yeah, she's a housemaid, and apparently she's pregnant. And the movie kind of starts with him, with Jackie telling his girlfriend that I don't care about you. You have no way of proving that the kid's mine. You know, I don't love you. You should get the hell out of here.
And he slaps her. He slaps her. He yells at her. And then he goes to his parents' house and he says, hey, by the way, there's some bad guys coming and they're going to kill everybody. And I'm like, wait, why didn't he just tell her that? There was no need to be so rude to her. And, oh, by the way, his parents said, oh, where's the girl that you got pregnant? What did you do with her? And he said, oh, I have a friend of mine who he's going to take care of her because I'm probably going to die. And this is important. They said, oh, you haven't known him for very long. He goes, no, but I trust him. Like, okay, that's whatever. But still, it's so weird that he wouldn't have just said, hey, guys, bad guys are coming to kill me. I don't want you to die. You should leave, instead of berating her and slapping her. So weird. It's just a very strange choice. But yeah, so then, oh yeah, they're like, how do you know bad guys are coming? He goes, oh, I have this hand. And he pulls a hand out of his shirt, out of his jacket, and it's got this killer bees tattoo on the hand, and the killer amazing. The killer bee logo had me dying. It's imagine the body of a bee and then the head of a person on the body. Just okay, that's weird. And then
it was a very strange looking person. It wasn't like, yeah, it was very weird.
It was like a, it's like when you go to Times Square, it's like a, it was like a caricature. It was like a caricature face. Yeah. And so I just started laughing. And then anyway, so the parents and Jackie get ready for the bad guys to come, the killer bees. And when they show up, they first throw a knife, and the knife is branded, and they catch the knife and they go, who is this? And it's the knife, the handle of the knife is the bee with the head of a person. And I'm just like, what is going on? And then this guy goes, give me my hand. And he comes out of nowhere and he grabs, Jackie throws the hand to him. And then the guy disappears and they use these amazing sound effects that were just incredible. And
yeah, I was like, oh man, we're in for a treat on this one. This is going to be awesome because this whole sequence was great. It was like straight out of From Dusk Till Dawn almost. Basically these six coffins like fly over the gate and like open with like mist everywhere, and they're like these weird people with these like flower faces, like, and yeah, the soundtrack is just like this far out like 70s like synth nightmare kind of thing. It's just
the opening was awesome. So yeah, these coffins show up and people come out of the coffins, and then more people show up and they're wearing these flower masks, and so they start fighting. And the bad guys, their weapon is, imagine a piece of bamboo, and at the end of the bamboo, they're using the bamboo, they're holding it like a torch, and at the end of the bamboo is flame, and they're using it to fight people with swords, and then they're blowing gas over the fuel over the flame to burn the people's faces. I was like, I've never seen that before. So that was pretty creative. And
I mean, it started out so cool. I think that's partly why I didn't like it, because it definitely set the wrong tone for the rest. Because, you know, obviously right after the fight, right after this sequence, it goes back to like a normal, boring, same kind of movie we've been seeing.
A movie where things just happen. And you're just, why is this happening? And then when you do find out, it's just, you're just like, are you kidding me? This is, are you serious? So they fight, and this woman reveals that Jackie's father killed her parents 15 years ago, and she's there for revenge, and she has a scar on her face that she said his dad gave to her. And so she's like, I'm going to kill all of you. So she kills the mom. She kills the mom. She kills the dad. And then Jackie, he gets knocked out or something. He gets knocked out, and then he wakes up and he's with her in the countryside. And she says, why did you spare me? And she says, because now you're going to be afraid for your life all the time. You're never going to know if I'm going to come kill you in your sleep or when you're walking down the street. And then she just goes, and runs away. Literally, ha 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 ha, and runs away. And that's this. So that's the setup. But he's been separated from his girlfriend, so he wants to go find his girlfriend now, his pregnant girlfriend, who's being guarded by his friend.
Apparently, his best means of finding her is walking to like open fields with no houses around and yelling her name, which is what it's like. Chin chin, chin chin. Just like yelling in these fields. I'm like, dude, go look at any like city or whatever.
I mean, I'm sorry, folks, to be like breaking this down, but you got to hear what happens. I mean, this is just ridiculous. So then after that, you know, the movie, I would say, is technically much more well-crafted than New Fist of Fury. You know, the camera work, the acting, and the editing is all a step above, but the movie itself is just so poorly structured and just poorly written overall. I would say my favorite stunt of the movie. Oh, well, let's talk about, hold on. I know we're in the middle of describing the plot, but while it's in my head, I want to say Jackie's fight, his martial arts work in this film is pretty standard. Nothing special. Very choreographed. Lots of tumbling on the ground. You know, well-rehearsed fighting, choreographed fighting. It's fine. It's good. I mean, it's more than I can do. And no standout stunts from Jackie at all. But my favorite stunt in the movie, Mason, has to be
It's probably going to be the same as mine.
is it when he gets ambushed by those guys and he grabs this guy attacks Jackie. I'm sorry, this is going to be kind of confusing. So if you can't follow me, I totally understand. So Jackie is he's staying in some kind of house, and these guys ambush him. And as he's fighting them, he kicks this guy through the roof in slow motion. He kicks him into the roof, and the guy goes bursting through the roof, and he lands on the roof. Then the bad guy crawls down the roof and swings through the window. But as he does that, Jackie picks up a sword and throws it at the guy, pinning him to a tree. It was insane.
Yeah, that was straight out of Evil Dead.
Oh, sure. Well, was that your favorite stunt as well?
Yes, yes, okay. Yes. Although, okay. I thought he just kicked the guy. He kind of flew up through the roof and then like down the side of it. It's like sliding down, and as he was plummeting towards the ground, Jackie hit him with a sword through the window.
Oh, I thought he was trying to come back in through the window, and Jackie caught him mid-air and pinned him to the tree. That happens.
And those guys are like we're the Red Mist Gang. Is that what?
No,
is that their
name? No. The Bloody Rain. Can we talk about Bloody Rain? Is the worst name for a gang ever. It just sounds dumb. I don't know why.
Dressed in these
it just doesn't work.
They're dressed in those red, like big red hats. It just was goofy.
Well, there was like some weird graphic where they show this guy hired them to kill somebody, and then they said, "We have a message for you." Oh, maybe that comes later. Oh, that came later, but the Bloody Rain Gang presented an image to this other guy. I don't even want to get into it. And he opens the scroll, and it's a dragon with its head cut off, bleeding everywhere. And
oh, that was great.
I was surprised by how graphic that was. But yeah, so, I mean, long story short, the movie is really about just Jackie wandering, looking for his girlfriend. That's all it is. And there's the plot of him looking for his girlfriend, and then the other plot is the girl who killed his mom and dad is in love with him. And, I'm sorry, like, I'm going to skip ahead, but because just so much crazy, it's just too boring and it's a waste of time. Long story short, Jackie, like, gets into a fight. He gets recruited by this company to help to work for them, and then they get into a fight with the Bloody Rain Gang, and the girl comes out of nowhere, and she kills everybody in the Bloody Rain Gang, and then Jackie gets these two balls thrown at him that attach to his side, and stabbed through the stomach, and he's still alive. And she goes, you know what? After she kills everyone. She goes, I'm going to take him back to my place, and I'll heal him. She does, and she takes him back and heals him. And when he's healed, he says, okay, thanks. I'm going to leave. I mean, I owe you, but I'm going to go find my girlfriend. And she says, no, you can't leave until you can defeat me. And every time you don't defeat me, you have to do what I say. And that's their deal. And a bunch of weird stuff happens. And one of them includes she scars him. And I want to talk about this, Mason, because the scar, when it's revealed, the scar that she gives him, she takes a hot poker and pushes it against his face. And when they reveal the scar when he's training, it's disgusting. It's a bad, it's very bad prosthetics, but it's also just flat out gross. And I do applaud them for that, because so many movies where they complain about people's scars or birthmarks are so tame, and they didn't hold back at all in this movie.
Yeah, he becomes straight up like Darth Vader without his helmet almost. It's like a real, or like a Two-Face kind of thing.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, it was like that, but really gross looking. Because I find it so funny, there's so many Hollywood films where they're like, look, don't look at my face, I have a horrible scar. Like Ready Player One, the girl, she had an avatar in Ready Player One that was supposed to be pretty, like very pretty, because she thinks she's unattractive in real life, which is not true. She was very attractive. And when she and the main character meets, she hides her face, and he's like, what's wrong? She goes, I don't want you to see my face. I'm hideous. I have a horrible birthmark. The birthmark was super opaque. I could hardly see it.
It was like a light pink line. Yeah.
It was a joke. And then I forget what other movies where people get badly scarred, and they're nothing. Yeah, it's just, I guess even James Bond, the new one where Christopher Waltz as Blofeld, Christoph Waltz, he gets scarred. That was a pretty lame scar. So Jackie goes through this trial, and he keeps failing and failing and failing every time he fights her. And finally she goes, all right, now you have to drink this poison water. And you see, before she gave it to him, they show you that she's like bleeding herself. She's cutting herself and bleeds into the cup. And then he drinks the poison liquid, and she goes, oh, this is insane. So then she goes, oh, guess what? It wasn't poison. It was my blood. And now you're going to be as powerful as I am. Like, what? Where did that come from?
And by the way, the whole time, the friend that Jackie had trusted.
This is the best part. That's the big one. Well, that's what we're building up to. This is the most insane reveal of all time. So you
just useless. Like, it's not needed.
So tell us. So Mason, please describe the reveal.
Well, basically, the friend that Jackie had asked to look after. He's like, remember, Jackie had basically decided, I'm going to be murdered with my parents, so I need my girlfriend to leave and to find a new life with someone new. And so the guy obviously has been trying to make moves on the girlfriend, but it turns out that he's also the leader of the Blood Rain gang, right?
He's the leader of the Bloody Rain. Well, hold on. You need to talk about how it was revealed. The company that Jackie was working for, they go to meet this guy who is the governor, and because they were like transporting stuff for him, and they said that the friend that Jackie left his girlfriend with, they said that the friend stole the goods, and they were trying to find the friend. They have to go to the governor, and when they show up to the governor to tell him that they lost the goods to this guy, the governor turns around, and it's the friend. It's Chin Chuan. It's Chin Chien, Jackie's friend that he left his girlfriend with. And so they're like, oh my God, it's you. You're the governor? He goes, not only am I the governor, I'm also Chin Chien. And who else do you think I am? And they're like, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm also a third
person. And I was like, yeah, I don't know either. And he said, and he goes, I'm also the leader of the Bloody Rain gang. I'm like, what the hell? And I was just like, this is the dumbest plan I've ever heard. It's just so dumb. And then he was going to originally, oh yeah, so before he told them the plan, they're like, we're so sorry that we, before he reveals he was the leader of the Bloody Rain gang, they said, we're so sorry we lost your stuff. We will die. Well, as punishment, we're willing to die. And he could have just had them die, right? But instead, he revealed who he was and had to fight them to the death. So it was just very stupid. So that happens. And then Jackie, after Jackie drinks the magical poison water with a woman's superpowers in it somehow, he leaves and he finds Chin Chuan. He finds out that Chin Chien is the leader of the Bloody Ring gang. So he goes to find him. They have a very uneventful final battle that I vaguely remember because it was nothing noteworthy.
Nothing memorable.
And and the bad guy's death was super anticlimactic. That's what I have written down in my notes. I can't even remember how he died. It was super lame. Nothing. Do you remember?
No, I don't even remember.
Yeah, it was nothing. Usually they die in some dramatic fashion. Like there's a special move that kills them. And in this movie, nothing happens. So it's so
funny.
Because
he's such a non-villain. He was absent the entire movie until the very, very, very end. When he's like, oh, by the way, I'm the governor and I'm also the villain.
Yeah. How did he keep his identity secret the whole time? That's what I don't get.
I don't know. It's very dumb.
Yeah. So then, after, of course, in classic, you know, Hong Kong movie style, after Jackie kills the villain, he finds his girlfriend. And then it shows the woman that was in love with Jackie. Actually, the best shot of the movie. It's a silhouette of her on a horse on a mountain with the sun in the background setting. And then it just says the end, and it ends. That's it.
Beautiful ending. I'm glad they were able to be reunited.
Yeah. I get, like, why is this movie an hour and 47 minutes? Like, I don't understand. Why is this not 80 minutes long?
And I was just going to say, 80 minutes would be perfect.
And there was not enough action. There was so much talking. I don't know how much control these directors had over the scripts, but clearly this guy was a very inconsistent director and did not have a good feeling for the talents of his actors. So,
why didn't they go for I thought they were going to go for like a horror thing. I don't know why they kind of wimped out on
it. Yeah, and it's weird because there are like those, the opening fight scene was great. And then the training stuff with the woman or the punishment, the trial by fighting with her was pretty engaging. But otherwise, the movie sucked, just like his other earlier movies. So we have another movie. I think another Way Low film. before we get to before we get to Snake and Eagle Shadow.
Yeah, one more, I think.
Is it Dragon Fist?
I don't have the list in front of me. You better pull it up.
All right, hold on. I'm going to pull it up. Can you hold, please?
Or I could probably pull it up. Okay. No, no. The next movie is Snake and the Eagle Shadow.
How's that possible? I thought we had two just more films.
No, it's the next. It's next. It's the next movie.
Yeah, so the next movie is Snake and Eagle Shadow. You're correct. So that's in 78. And after that, we have Snake and Crane, Arts of Shaolin, Magnificent Bodyguards, Half a Loaf of Kung Fu, Drunken Master, Spiritual Kung Fu, Fear. So this is the good run. We're getting into it. I am surprised. I'm going to check on Dragon Fist for a second because I think that is a Weilo film. It is. Why would Jackie go back to Weilo? I wonder if there's a contractual deal or something. Because
yeah, I remember because he's working for two studios at this point. And oh, I think his main studio is probably with Weilo. I mean, if Weilo is the Bruce Lee kind of part of the Bruce Lee formula, then he's probably pretty big in Hong Kong at the time. He's probably the big guy to work with.
It says, well, not really. His last movie, couple of movies with Jackie were bombs. So the plot for, oh, this is Fearless Hyena. That's not Dragon Fist. Wait, did Weilo also direct? No, Weilo wrote Fearless Hyena. That's interesting. For Dragon Fist, Weilo directed it, and the plot is Tong Huo Wan seeks redress. I think they mean maybe revenge. Tong Huo Wan seeks revenge from the man responsible for his master's death, but becomes entangled in a feud between a local clan and gangsters. Sounds like every other Jackie Chan movie that he's done with Weilo.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Jesus. I just don't get it.
Ugh. Well, at least we got Snake and Eagle Shadow next, which is his big breakthrough, right?
Yeah, I'm super pumped. I've seen that movie two or three times, but I haven't seen it in a good 10 years. I'm excited. I hope you like it. It's definitely, this is the Jackie that we know and love, and I'm so happy to get away from this crap. Sorry, Jackie. I'm sorry. Everyone, you worked your ass off. I get it, and you're the biggest star in the world now. So it all worked out. Yeah, sweet. So yeah, that's To Kill with Intrigue, another messy wuxia film with a pretty bland Jackie acting performance where he displayed none of his Jackie charisma that we know and love, no Jackie stunts that we know and love, and just a very convoluted, stupid plot. So yeah.
Well, like, you know, I think the most interesting of the movies that we've seen so far have been Jackie kind of attempting something different and then really going for it. And I think that's my main beef with this movie was, like, they flirted with kind of doing like a horror movie, but they don't really go for it. It just has that one horror sequence, and then the rest is just the same boring kind of thing where it's not even an action movie. I don't even know what kind of movie it is, because there's no suspense. There's no big, you know, the fights are not really notable. There's no kind of set piece type deals that you usually see in a Jackie Chan movie. It's just this guy going around and things happening to him.
You know? Right, exactly. The movie is just things happen. Like, not, it's a non-story. But what's interesting is I started watching that Hong Kong film documentary I mentioned to you. I watched it the first 20 minutes, and it has all the big shots in it. Jet Li, Sammo, John Woo, no Jackie. And they talk about what it's like to work on a martial arts film and how they, I haven't seen Once Upon a Time in China, but they talk about how hard that was and where the idea for that came from. But they say that a lot of the time they don't figure out the choreography until they're on set. I think they do practice, but it's not storyboarded out. They figure it out and then they film it. And this movie, I mean, the choreography was so uninspiring. I don't want to say lazy because it's obviously still requires a lot of work, but it just was lame. It just sucked.
There was some good stuff, but like it was even shot weird. There were like a lot of really wide shots that looked like they were shot from like top of a building or something.
But that's another thing. The camera was kind of weirdly raw. There was a lot of handheld work in this movie, especially during the action scenes, which was kind of bizarre. Because usually it's very careful how they shoot and edit fight scenes, but a lot of the time the actors' backs were to the camera, which is not normal for a martial arts film. So yeah, I don't know. Weird movie. I'm glad it's over with. So so we don't end on that weird note. It's as we're still in quarantine, and we probably will be for a long time. You know, Mason and I, or everybody really, and no one in the United States at least is going to the theaters. However, I read online apparently that half of the theaters in the movie world have reopened. But even when they do reopen here in the United States, I'm not planning on going because I just don't trust people actually wearing masks for 2 hours. I'm sorry. And I'm not going to catch coronavirus just because I wanted to see Tenet. So,
you know, all those people are popping that mask off the second they sit down, the second the lights go down. I see that happen at the Walmart or whatever when you go to the grocery store.
Really? You do?
They wear the mask into the store, and then they basically take it off right after they go down the first aisle. Yeah, it's embarrassing.
It's so embarrassing. Yeah. So, as you can imagine, everyone's kind of stuck to resorting to watching older films. So, that's what I've been doing, kind of catching up on a lot of movies I've never seen, and also kind of revisiting movies that I love that make me happy. So I'm going to, you know, we're going to try and highlight a couple movies at the end of each episode. You know, you guys have any recommendations, let us know. Always looking for something new. Mason, what have you watched that you have found notable in the last
weeks? Well, I feel sort of bad because I don't have any, I never have like anything too magnificent to recommend. It's either like something so obviously going to be mentioned on a movie podcast, which will be the first thing that I talk about, or it'll be something that like anyone who knows anything about like 80s horror has already seen because it's the featured movie of the month on Shudder. But that's still what I'm going to cover. So the first movie I've seen recently was I finally saw Mulholland Drive, and I thought it was like insanely fun and just so good. You know, did I call you, Ethan, or?
Yeah, you called me, which never happens, by the way. Mason refuses to talk on the phone. So
I hate talking on the phone.
I knew this was a big deal when he called me.
Yeah, I had a pitch for a movie that I came up with just because I was thinking about storytelling, just because of how good the movie was. But also I was just ranting about how I loved it, and I was just so delighted by how many things were kind of revisited in season 3 of Twin Peaks. I knew that he kind of worked in some elements from other films into that season, but I didn't know how directly. You know, Mulholland Drive feeds into season 3 of Twin Peaks, and I just was, you know, kind of blown away by the movie as a whole, and I just loved it.
Yeah, I saw the movie for the first time. Like, I actually bought the DVD like 10 years ago. I just never got around to it just because I was intimidated by it, and I watched it for the first time probably 8 months ago, and I loved it. Like, it was amazing. It's awesome. If you haven't seen it, it's real. It's very dreamlike, which is David Lynch's whole MO. Yeah, I also highly recommend it.
Yeah, obviously surreal is his, like you said, his MO. I was a little bit, I loved every moment of the movie, but I was like not in a way that was like a philosophical like gut punch, but just scratching my head at the very, very end. I didn't really get. I thought it was funny, and I don't know if that was meant to be funny, but it just struck me as really. It couldn't be anything other than like a really dark joke, and I thought really confused me. But you know, that's sort of his point. But it just felt differently confusing than some of his other stuff. You know,
right?
It wasn't like a symbolism that I didn't recognize. It was more just like, what? Why did he go with this? You know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway, yeah. Overall, I loved it. I loved it.
I saw Ip Man 4. And, you know, fitting with the theme of this podcast, if you guys aren't familiar, Ip Man is the legendary person who trained Bruce Lee and Wing Chun. And they have made 4 of them with starring Donnie Yen. The first one came out in 2008, and it was a huge worldwide phenomenon, like massive hit. So, of course, they made 4. And the third one had Mike Tyson in it, and it was trash. But the fourth one was, it was weird because it was billed as the finale, and it didn't feel like a finale. The movie is basically about Ip Man. He gets diagnosed with cancer, and he wants his son. His wife is dead, and he wants his son to go to a school in the United States So he goes to America at the request of Bruce Lee. He goes to San Francisco, and the movie is about showing the racism that Chinese face amongst Americans in American society. And the movie's very simple, but I found it, you know, it was a solid 3 out of 5. It was very entertaining. Donnie Yen as Ip Man is awesome. He is the character. The fights were pretty good. They were kind of short, which was a little weird. They actually brought Wenwu Peng back to do the choreography, which is pretty crazy because the dude is like in his mid to late 70s. But the movie was, and I say, bring it back to the final chapter thing. Final chapters are usually super dramatic, and the movie just kind of ends, and it's like, oh yeah, Ip Man died. And it shows his funeral, and Bruce Lee shows up, and then the movie ends. And I was just, it was just very, just full stop. So, yeah, I say if you've seen the first couple, the 1 and 2 are really good. 3 sucks, 4 is fine. But, yeah.
I tried to watch it, and I fell asleep. So that's my review of it.
You didn't even finish it? I didn't realize that.
No, I probably didn't even get like a third of the way through it. I just fell asleep. They were talking around a big circular table, and they had a cool fight, and then I fell asleep.
Yeah, not much, you didn't miss much. But yeah, that's
when he was like talking to the guy about getting his son into colleges in America. I was like, I don't know if this really is going to be a good use of my time.
Well, I mean, the whole movie is just about how hard it is for Chinese people to move forward in American society. So that was the whole point. And that, but on the flip side, it was showing how the Chinese community didn't want to be sharing martial arts with the Western community. Yeah. And then anything else, Mason, that you've seen that you would recommend?
Yes, I also saw, I mean, I've seen so many things because what else are we doing?
Yeah, right.
You know, but I did see, I saw Maniac Cop finally. I saw all 3 of them are now on Shudder. And so I watched 1 and 2, not back to back, but like in 2 nights, which is basically almost as good. In fact, in some ways it's better than doing the marathon because it gives you time to really think about the movies in between. You know, each one, and it lets you revisit it in a way that I find to be more satisfying. So if you're a big movie head and you'd like to marathon movies, I suggest trying to space it out over like multiple nights because it just feels better somehow. But anyway, the movie was really interesting. I mean, it was a cheesy, it's a Larry Cohen horror movie, he's great. His movies are very New York, which is cool. You know, it just feels very authentically New York. Like you could see how grimy it was in the 80s, and everyone's got, you know, the cool accents and stuff. But something about the characters in his movies feels a little bit more realistic than your average, you know, 80s schlock. But I like the movies. It basically, the story is like, there's a cop who basically went too far, and the system kind of threw him under the bus. And when he went to prison, all the people that he had put in prison murder him. But he comes back from the dead, and he's just killing people for, like, you know, jaywalking and simple things. Like, he's just being really over the top, murdering as a vigilante. And, you know,
The sequels were good.
The second was just as good as the first, although the first, Bruce Campbell is the lead, so it's hard to really top that, you know. But, you know, you swap out Bruce Campbell for a different actor, and it's not going to be as fun. But the second was, you know, had better scares, and it was kind of a better shot, and, you know, it was a more creative movie in many ways, but it just, without Bruce Campbell in the lead, it wasn't quite as good, I don't think. But both were fun. Both were fun, and I think resonated in a way that maybe they wouldn't have without sort of the current stuff going on with police kind of being overly violent with citizens in America. It felt very now, you know. And I read that they're remaking it as a TV show for HBO Max right now. Someone interesting is doing it. I should have looked up who that was. Let me see if I can pull it up very, very, very fast. I don't know. Never mind. I thought it was someone interesting, but maybe not. Sorry about that.
So,
but it was a fun movie. I recommended watching it.
Cool. Well, you brought up something that I've been thinking about lately, and I didn't stick to it at all last fall. So I'm going to really try this fall. Ethan. What?
You know the guy that directed like Neon Demon and Drive?
No way. Nicholas Winding Refn is doing Maniac Cop reboot.
Yeah, he's doing Maniac Cop. Yeah.
You know it's not going to be campy at all then.
Yeah, it's going to be brutal. I can't wait to see it.
It's going to be brutal. It's going to be deadly serious. It's going to be atmospheric. It's going to be very simple. Okay. Well, I'm excited to see Maniac Cop now. I didn't really know much about it. As I was saying, Mason's the horror head. I'm not. Horror is not a genre I got into. As I've gotten older, I've definitely gotten into it more, but I'm still not into like the goofier stuff. Like I love religious horror. I like creature features, like smart ones. Like I love American Werewolf in London and The Thing and all the ones everyone else loves, obviously. But I still haven't seen like Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, and the Halloween series. So my Halloween's resolution for this year is to try and watch all the Nightmare on Elm Streets. Maybe some of the... I saw Halloween 1 for the first time last year. And then to also watch... what was the last... It was Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, and what was it? Oh, Jason. I've never seen Friday the 13th. And so also I want
to
watch...
You don't need to, man. You don't need to.
Really? That boring? Okay.
Not good.
Maybe I'll skip Friday the 13th. It's just a movie that everyone talks about that I've never seen. I want to see Exorcist 2 and 3 for sure. That's on my list. But I'm excited to see Nightmare on Elm Street just because of I think the special effects are going to be awesome, and I've heard the first one's really good. So yeah,
I think you'll love Exorcist 3. I don't know about Exorcist 2. I can't vouch for that.
Well, apparently Exorcist 2 is so batshit insane. So I'm pretty excited for that too. And then I guess I've just added Maniac Cop, and then I'm going to watch Phantasm as well. So
you should check out The Blob, dude, too.
Yeah, that's supposed to be really good.
It's just, I mean, I think you might not like it because you'll be like, this is just The Thing, but I think you'll like it.
All right. What about, have you ever seen Attack of the Killer Tomatoes?
I have not seen it, but I don't know.
I remember as a kid, I was dying to see it because there was a TV show. It was a cartoon. And then I found out there was a real live action of it. And you know George Clooney's in one of them.
I imagine it must be kind of like Toxic Avenger, right? That's the vibe I'm imagining.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, by the way, I don't know why, but somehow today I stumbled upon the trailer for Small Soldiers. Remember that movie?
Yeah, Small Soldiers, Big Battles.
Dude, it was literally, I watched a trailer, it's just Gremlins. It was just Gremlins, essentially. So that ends this week's episode, and I'm excited to see Snake and Eagle Shadow next week. I mean, I'm pumped. So, thanks again for tuning in.
Can't wait.
Mason, you want to sign us off?
Yeah, you can follow us on Instagram at The Final Frame, and we are on YouTube. Just search for Chatting About Chan, and you'll definitely see where we are.
And we're on all streaming platforms. Awesome. Thanks for listening. See you next week.